Moody's Analytics have just released a report showing that it added 227,000 private sector jobs this month, 9,000 more than the 218,000 private payroll jobs that were created in September. Most of these gains are in the services industry, adding 189,000 jobs, construction and manufacturing each adding about 17,000. In Boston.
I'm just up here for the day, and I wouldn't miss it for the world.
The it that Red Sox fan is referring to is the big parade to celebrate the Red Sox World Series championship. That parade is going to step off in just about an hour. The Boston police are urging fans who are crowding the roads already to act responsibly. USA Radio News.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now, and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-561-5716. That's 800-561-5716. Again, 800-561-5716.
Hey, Pat, did you know between the two of us, we know how to screw in a light bulb?
Come on, Steve. We can do better than that. Well, at least I can. Tell you what. You sit there and look pretty, and I'll fix it.
Listen to you, big guy. Better yet, let's get everyone to listen to Home Sweet Home with me, Steve Bailey, Inspector with Brass Tack Home Inspections.
And I'm Pat Gregory, Handyman Extraordinaire with Taskman Home Improvements, every Friday at 11 a.m. Or you can go to our archives and get access to over 50 podcasts. We cover the basement to the attic and everything in between.
You can even call us at 908-237-0410 during our radio program about our home improvement projects. Remember, Home Sweet Home, every Friday at 11 on Hunterton Chamber Radio.
From the basement to the attic, you're listening to Steve and Patrick. Home Sweet Home.
Good morning. This is Nicole Smith. You're listening to Happy to Help, and we're going to start with the weather. Nice and sunny today. It's going to get up to a high of 64, so nice and balmy for all those trick-or-treaters tonight. And then tonight, it's going to be mostly cloudy, down to a low of 52, a high of 68, and chance of rain tomorrow, low of 58 tomorrow night, 69 on Friday, but also showers, Friday night showers, and Saturday night showers, and partly cloudy, but Sunday, it looks like the sun's coming out again.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterton Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterton-chamber.org.
Good morning. This is Nicole Smith, and you're listening to Happy to Help. We're on Facebook Live today. If you want to check it out on Facebook, Happy to Help or at Happy Hunterton. And this is a show about volunteers and people doing good in their community and around the world to help others. And looks like the ground crew's outside today mowing the lawn. So, oh well. Anyway, so I'm very happy today to welcome Colleen Dewar, who is the founder of Shifting Gears Consulting. Welcome.
Hi, Nicole. Thanks for having me.
And I know Colleen because she is the chair of the Women's Business Forum here at Hunterton County, and I've been enjoyed working with her. And she is no stranger to nonprofit work and for-profit work and giving and doing and volunteering. So can you tell us a little bit about your background and how Shifting Gears Consulting came to be?
Sure. Well, after several decades of work, I'll try to make a long story short. Let's put it that way. I started out with a communications degree that led me into, of course, the banking field, because that makes all kinds of sense, right? I worked in financial services for about 10 years, and while it certainly wasn't my dream job, I learned a lot of lessons in that job, and I got a lot of really great job skills. So let me just start by encouraging young people to get the best out of your first job, because I certainly did. I then, because I was having my children, I decided that I would go home and start doing some consulting work. So I was doing consulting work in the for-profit business because, if anybody remembers, the late 90s for the banking industry, it was pretty much decimated. So there was a lot of work to be had in terms of training, writing. Writing was a big thing. Mm-hmm. People don't like to write. So
oh, yeah.
I got paid to write. I did training, like I said, and database work and anything that I could do while I was home with my children. And then I hit, have you read The Tipping Point by Malcolm Gladwell?
I've heard of it, but yeah.
Okay. Well, my tipping point came when a good friend of mine who was at that point the same age as me, 34, mother of two, was diagnosed with lung cancer, stage four. She was a non-smoker. It was a hormonally based cancer, and it was just a really, really tough thing to go through when you're in your early 30s and your kids are 2 and 5. So I started doing a Fit for Cancer fundraiser that is now spread out to a lot of different gyms in the community, and it's raising a ton of money for our Hunterdon Regional Cancer Center. And I'm really, really proud of that. But that was kind of my tipping point, and that got the attention of the Medical Center Development Department. So I took a job there doing event planning for a couple of years. And then from there went to America's Grow a Row, which many people in the community are familiar with, mm-hmm. and helped the founder, Chip Palix, kind of, that was a very grassroots experience. And I just really got so much out of that in terms of starting a nonprofit and starting it well with a strong database and good communications and things like that. So that was a really terrific experience, which then led me to Family Promise of Hunterdon County. And there I was the development director and also the co-director of the agency for almost 6 years. And again, just a really fantastic experience as the first development person on staff.
Nice.
So having a person dedicated to fundraising, community education, communication, social media, managing the website, you know, really is so helpful for a very small nonprofit. So mm-hmm. That was a terrific experience. And now we're at Shifting Gears Consulting. So
I love the name. I love the logo.
Thank you. Awesome. I do too. It really speaks to the point in my life and where I think I can be helpful. And I'm certainly not limiting myself to the nonprofit sector. I've got plenty of experience in the for-profit sector and would love to work with those companies. But I really feel like I've become such a strong advocate for not-for-profits and the work that they are doing on a shoestring budget and with limited staff and the passion and the drive and the care and the love that they give to their mission and their clients. And I just want to be helpful in that. And while it may not be the most lucrative line of business, my husband has assured me that it's okay, so we're good. I really have such a passion for the industry, and I would love to just share that and be helpful.
Great. Well, it sounds like you're off to a great start. And then I think did you dabble in this before? Because I read about Tall Cow or
yes,
something like that.
Yes, that was my original consulting business.
Which I want to hear. I love the name.
I decided to rebrand it. When I went back to consulting, I decided to rebrand and just start new logo, new name, new everything. But yes, Tall Cow was my baby for really almost 20 years off and on, depending on whether I was working or picking up.
Yeah. And well, where did that name come from? I just love it.
Oh, it's a very strange story, but it has to do with an expression my dad used to use that I cannot repeat on Hunterdon Chamber Radio. But it also was sort of a nod to Hunterdon County and this, you know, agriculture area that we live in.
Cute.
And I have a sister-in-law who's a very, very talented graphic designer. So she designed this really cool kind of tall, sexy cow logo. So it really kind of worked for a long time.
Oh,
but you know, like I said, it was time to reinvent. So I reinvented.
Well, that's good. Well, I come from the Midwest or maybe it's from Texas. I don't remember where, but it was cow tipping was like a,
oh, yes. I'm from central Pennsylvania.
So well, that's our cow reference for the day, but I love that. Well, why don't you tell, you know, share some of your, well, the other thing I want to ask you about is if you're consulting and you're consulting for a nonprofit and nonprofits are running on a shoestring budget. So how do you negotiate your fee for consulting, right? Because we know the McKinsey's of the world, it's big bucks for these consultants. And I mean, maybe that's just a connotation with consulting. Yeah. But so how do you, I'm just curious, how do you price your services for a nonprofit on a shoestring budget? I guess you add value, right? So just tell me, walk me through that. I want to hear
consultants
that.
Consultants and attorneys get a bad rap, don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
But what I try to do, especially, it's fairly easy for me to make the justification with development work, because what I've done over the past, I don't know, 10, 12 years is a ton of grant research, just tons and tons, hours upon hours upon hours. And so I've built a database that I'm hoping to tap into for local nonprofits, mm-hmm. or at least regional nonprofits in this area. So whatever I charge, the idea is that you're going to get that back and then some.
Right.
So, you know, one of the projects that I've priced out for a couple of nonprofits is just to be sort of a development director in a box, mm-hmm. if you will. So to take a year, mm-hmm. and work with a nonprofit, build them a grants database, write grants for them, and kind of develop both a paper and an online binder that can then be used, and leave them with a grants calendar that says, okay, now next year you're going to do this.
Yeah, that's
but
great.
Everything's set up. So we're talking about, you know, cutting and pasting and not reinventing the wheel. Not to say that every grant should be cut and pasted, but you know what I'm saying.
It's similar.
Right. So if the basic information is already templated, it makes that nonprofit's life so much easier.
Right.
So my goal is to kind of be that support person for a year.
Nice.
The other thing is things like communications, doing e-newsletters that aren't being done for some nonprofits, helping with social media presence, some printed materials, annual community reports, things like that. Now, you look at that and you say, well, that's an expense. You know, how can they possibly afford it? But I can tell you multiple stories about things that have come to Family Promise because I was able to professionalize some of our communications, whether it was an outright donation, a car donation for a client, toiletries for a toiletry closet. All those communications get the word out and spread the word of the mission. And so it's sort of a tangential effect or a soft effect. I can't necessarily say, well, that came from that. But I can give you some hard stories about things that have come in because we're communicating better.
Yeah.
So I have a car. Again, that's a template, right?
Okay. No, that's great. I have a car I'm ready to get rid of, so maybe I should.
Okay. We'll talk.
Okay. well, I think that's amazing. Well, I'm going to talk about, I always talk about Room to Read, but what I did is we did a community cookbook where we curated all these recipes and then made $10,000 selling the cookbooks.
Wonderful.
Everywhere. Well, and then I took the extra inventory and then I make gift baskets for other galas, and I put the cookbook and all this kitchen stuff in the gift basket.
Perfect.
Again, so same thing, like tangential.
All, yep, I love it.
Yeah, no, it's just work. You know,
makes
working.
The world go around.
Yeah, no, and I love it. And you never know. You just got to have faith that somebody's looking at it somewhere and it's going to come circle back around.
Absolutely.
And, you know,
yeah.
So I love stuff like that.
It's a great idea.
Yeah. So, well, what do you, give us some advice on fundraising. Everybody's always trying to fundraise for their favorite cause. So what would be some basic fundraising tips you would offer people or organizations that, without giving away your whole secret?
But I think diversify is the one single best lesson that I have learned over time. And that is to take a look at where your money is coming from and make sure it's not too heavily weighted in grant funding, especially government grant funding. Now, see, that's a lot of people get super sensitive about that. Like, oh, government grant funding is bad. It is not.
It's money.
Not. It is. Well, it's also programs that benefit the community. And so I'll give you a quick example. At Family Promise, we had a program that was a HUD-funded program administered by the state called Homeless Prevention. That allowed us to pay up to 3 months of back rent and up to 3 months of forward rent for somebody who was facing eviction through some emergency, mm-hmm. something that qualified them for the program that just said, listen, if I don't get this taken care of, it could be a medical emergency, a temporary loss in income, an accident. So if you think about it, if we had said no government funding, then our community in Hunterdon County would not have that program. And there are people who would not receive that and might end up homeless.
Right.
So I'm a little sensitive about the whole government funding thing, but by the same token, you asked about fundraising. Let's make sure that the big portion of the budget isn't being held up by government funding, because gosh, that can be fickle. And then grant funding as well. I'm a big proponent of grant funding. I think there's a lot of small foundations out there that can be unearthed, and maybe it's 1,000, 2,000, 5, 10. But if you can bring that kind of money in, it's a really, really, really nice way to kind of shore up your budget.
Right.
The rule of thumb is that 80% of your income, your revenue, should be coming from individuals. That's the ideal scenario.
80-20, yeah.
That's a lofty goal, I think. And I think that rule doesn't necessarily apply to every nonprofit. There's certainly plenty of exceptions to that. But your individual donors at $50, $100, $500, yes, they can be fickle, but losing $75 is not the same as losing $75,000.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's true. And, well, I think the hard part about this grants and the government grants and different government funding is it's just a giant bureaucracy. That's what I view it as. And it's if you don't know how to navigate that, then it's really cumbersome and time-consuming,
yeah,
where you've got the experience and you know where to go and how to navigate all that.
But that also took a lot of commitment. You know, our former executive director really established that grant and established the relationship. And the rule of, you know, not the rule, but the suggestion that you establish a connection with a foundation, with a funder.
Right.
You know, you establish a relationship. It's the same thing with government funding. We established a really strong relationship with the state of New Jersey, and therefore they trusted us with this funding. And by the same token, we were good communicators to them. So I think that same rule applies. And while it may seem bureaucratic, and yes, there's a fair amount of, let's just say, silliness in the application and execution process. There's a really good benefit to having some of those.
Right. If you kind of know that you're it's going to be worth it in the end, your hope.
And if it makes sense for your mission, you know,
right,
I think one
of
the rules that nonprofits break all the time is, well, there's a funding source out there. There's $5,000. It doesn't quite fit into our mission, but we're just going to create a program so that we can get the money.
Yeah,
that's really not a good idea.
Yeah, no, I agree. You've got to do your homework. There's great relationships out there, great fits. You just got to do the homework and find it.
Right.
And that's why I try and tell people with this show is that's what we're trying to showcase, different volunteer opportunities, because everyone should be volunteering, I think, and it can enhance your life so much, but you have to find the right opportunity. And it might not be the first soup kitchen you work at or the first place you donate to or whatever, but you can find it with a little bit of effort, right?
Yeah, and I would implore people to do the work that needs to be done. I think sometimes there's a feeling of, well, I like this and I don't like that, and I think I'd rather do this. That speaks to exactly what you were saying. So if the organization, if it's not a good fit, that's okay. There's somebody that does need your help.
Right.
But I think as nonprofits, we tend to allow people to do whatever they want to do. And then you have all these jobs left undone.
Right. And the key, like you said before, is communication. So just communicate. I always communicate that right up front. This is the kind of volunteer work we do and that what we don't do. And, you know, so you just have to, if this is what you want to do, great. If this is not for you, there's a million other organizations
out there.
Right.
I might even suggest another organization.
Oh, I totally
sometimes.
Do. Yeah. I always do. It depends on what they want. Okay. Well, we're going gangbusters and this is great, but we are going to take a quick break.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Nicole Smith. You're listening to Happy to Help, and we're back today. We're talking to Colleen Dewar, and she's a doer, with Shifting Gears Consulting, and we're talking about all these great things that she's offering with her new consulting business for profits, nonprofits and for-profit companies. But really quick, we want to give a shout-out to Hunterdon Chamber's 30th Business Expo, which is coming up on November 8th. It's at the Flemington Next Gen Ice Arena right here in Flemington, and they have all kinds of vendors and nonprofits, and there's food involved. The popular food showcase will be from 5 to 7, and you can bring your family. I'll look for the hours. I think, it's 2 to 7. Oh, sorry. It's Thursday, November 9th, from 2 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the Next Level Arena on Case Boulevard in Flemington. There it is. Okay. Now we're going to go back to talking to Colleen, and we're going to talk about, Giving Tuesday is coming up, the giving season's coming up, and people want to be generous towards the end of the year, the annual appeal, all that good stuff. And what would you suggest for people that want to give but are leery of, is my money going to the right place? Is it going for the best of the people that I want to benefit, or is it going into the void? So how can people make sure the donations that they give are going for the greater good?
Well, you know, you and I were speaking about this before the show started, and talking about how I feel very strongly that there are massive trust issues with nonprofits these days. And we use the Red Cross as an example, as really a lightning rod. You know, there are people on both sides of that spectrum, some who, you know, my in-laws, after generations and decades, just cannot forgive the Red Cross for the way they were treated in World War II Germany. And then you have other people who suffered a fire or a flood and were helped by the Red Cross and are immensely grateful. So, you know, but I think what happens is you have these sort of memes that go around Facebook, and they talk about salaries, and there's so much misinformation out there, and it's very, very frustrating. I think it's created a lot of trust issues with nonprofits. And I think the disaster relief is such a great example, and people tend to want to give stuff they don't want to give to charity.
Right.
And that's a problem on so many levels, because one, the nonprofits that are doing the work down there need the money now. Mm-hmm. They really do. And the other thing I would encourage people to do, and we're just speaking to disaster relief, is if you're not comfortable giving money, send gift cards.
Yeah.
But ideally, figure out how you can send gift cards for local stores down there.
Right.
Because those businesses are trying to, you know,
good idea.
They're building themselves back up. So if you really, really, really want to be helpful, I would also highly discourage anyone from bringing stuff, unless you have a very specific contact that has asked for very specific items. You know, I remember reading after Hurricane Andrew in Florida, something like 7 million pounds of clothing went into a landfill. So what happens is you have disaster, and I've done disaster relief. I was in Haiti a month after the earthquake, and I did some help with Hurricane Sandy. And so I've seen what happens when well-intentioned donations just flood. The just can't handle it. But back to your question. I'm sorry, that was a really circuitous route.
It's all good.
Back to Giving Tuesday. In order to build trust, I think a couple of things I would keep in mind is, as you had mentioned, Charity Navigator, GuideStar is another one. Those are really, really good resources for finding out the best rated charities for doing the work that you feel needs to be done, whether it's disaster relief or cancer or kids or homelessness, poverty, food, you name it. Look at Charity Navigator. It doesn't take that long to do a little bit of research. When one of the hurricanes happened last year, that's exactly what I did. I went to Charity Navigator and found that Catholic Charities in Houston was doing the best job with hurricane. So they're okay. I have no connection to them, but I trust that they're going to do the work. The second thing I would encourage people to do is get close to a nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
Really spend some time, whether it's volunteering or just researching or just watching, find out something that you're passionate about. And it could be a couple things, but really start to decide who you think is accomplishing the mission the best, helping the clients that you feel need to be helped, the people who need to be helped. if you feel comfortable that they're doing the work that needs to be done, I don't think you need a whole lot more investigation than that. There's a lot of reporting mechanisms that nonprofits have to deal with. They have to do 990s, which are tax returns for nonprofits that don't pay taxes. They should have audits. All those things are available for those who want to take it to that level or take that deeper dive. And if you feel you need to do that, by all means, do it. But understand what you're looking at. I think that's the other problem is if you can't read a 990 or understand or have perspective as to the salaries, the amount that the percentage that goes to programming, if you don't have a good, strong background in that, it doesn't mean quite as much. Does that make sense?
Right. Because it's not the same metric can't be applied across the board to every single one. Right. I mean,
correct.
there's general guidelines, you know, but if you want to dig deep, you got to understand
right.
the numbers.
And you also, the 990 doesn't tell you what a nonprofit is not paying for. So you, as somebody who is very well connected with a nonprofit, knows that the essence of volunteerism and the value of volunteerism, that doesn't show up on your 990.
Right. Yeah. The intangibles again, right?
Space that is given to you. That's going to show up in your 990.
Right.
Donated food, donated supplies.
Right.
That doesn't show up on the 990. So you might be looking at salaries, which you think are too high, but you're not seeing what's not being paid for.
Right. Right. No, that's a good point. And the other thing that we always go back to is what's your why? So if you have friends through your church or through your community, through your school that are passionate or working for or volunteering for a nonprofit, and they're like, I'm nuts over Room to Read, or they're nuts over whatever group they're working with, ask them why.
Absolutely.
And, you know, there's a testament right there. If they're devoting their time and their effort and their life to this organization and the people they're helping, then maybe that's good enough for you. I mean, just get some feedback or to get an understanding of, you know, look at this person. They're so happy. What are they doing? You know, where are they getting this happy juice? And it's from volunteering usually. So
yeah, it's really cool. We do actually in our family, on my side of the family, my parents have decided years ago they don't want any more stuff.
Right.
So every year at Christmas, they get a donation in their name. And so it makes it really fun for us to really think about what this year makes the most sense. And so, you know, last year it was a donation to St. Martin, which had been devastated by a hurricane, and it was an island that we had visited with them.
Oh.
You know, this year I lost an uncle to Alzheimer's. So it will be Alzheimer's. And it's really, if you... You know, many, I don't want to go all religious here, but many have heard the expression, God loves a cheerful giver. I think everybody loves a cheerful giver.
Yeah.
And I think when you're giving with that kind of real passion or you just feel good about it, then that's the right donation, isn't it?
It's genuine. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's genuine. And, good word.
Right. And I think that that's true because you just give to, the kids, like they love to shop, but they don't need anything. So what I say, let's take the list from the Christmas tree at the church or the school, and then you can go shop and you don't need anything, but it's fun to shop. And then you're giving someone else something or get those gift cards or toys or whatever. So they love to do that. You know?
That is a great activity. We did that for years with our kids, and it's a good lesson.
Yeah, definitely. Well, what other wisdom can you impart on? Oh, you mentioned, I think on your website what is your website? You want to give it to people if they want to check it out?
It's actually shiftinggears.consulting. And that's it. That's the name of the website.
Great.
There's no .com or, yeah.
Yeah.
Shiftinggears.consulting.
Okay, great. And then you talked a little bit, I think, about reading books. You like to read books and lifelong learning. So I always love to give book recommendations. So you've probably read The Soul of Money.
I have not.
Oh my gosh, that's a good one for nonprofits and fundraising and everything. That's my favorite. So do you have any other books that people might read or look at or anything you've read recently? It's fine.
Oh gosh, you're putting me on the spot. I have to think about it.
Okay.
I might have to answer that after the next commercial break because I've read a lot of, I'll put in a plug right now for a very dear childhood friend of mine, Tammy Stoner, just wrote a book called Sugarland.
Aww.
It's her first novel, and I just think that is the coolest thing ever, and it came out 2 days before her 50th birthday. So what a cool birthday present. She birthed a book on her 50th birthday.
I love it. And what, do you know the premise of it?
Yeah, so it's about a young woman who is working in a prison in Texas, and she is in love with her best friend. And so I'm only in the beginning of the book, so I can't tell you what happens.
Cool.
But so far, it is just a beautiful example of really good writing.
All right. Well, good for her.
Yeah.
Yeah. You did mention you've done some writing, nonfiction writing, right? Or fiction. Wait, no, not.
No, I have not.
No, I'm sorry. So you did the writing for the banking. Sorry. So, and do you just come to writing naturally, or did you take some classes or read some books to help with your writing, or you just kind of evolved?
I think all of the above. I came from a family of good communicators. My mother and my father are both really, really talented writers. And my father in particular is a very talented speaker. And as it so happens, so is my brother. So I think it's in the genes to some extent. I had some excellent writing teachers in high school.
Okay.
I had really good language arts teachers. I was on the speech team, competed at the state level. So I think I got that really good encouragement, but also we diagrammed sentences. How about you?
I know. I don't remember anything.
Oh, yeah, we diagrammed sentences. So grammar, everything nice. Was sort of beaten into me, but I also had some really good college professors, and I think I enjoy it, but I learned to edit too, which is the hardest part.
Right.
And now I've got a daughter who is a writing minor at Syracuse University, a kid who used to come to tears over editing her own work. But once you get that, you develop a rhythm and a style, and I kind of like it. And I also think that one of the keys to success is, back in the day when I was in college, we used note cards. We would go to the library and you'd put a quote, you'd put a bibliography reference, and then you take them back to your bed and you sort them all out, and that's how you develop a paper. And so I think that's how I've developed the ability to take a mass of information and condense it into somewhat coherent written form.
Yeah, that's good.
And also, I think back in the day, we could trust what information we were pulling from the library. When you're getting it off the internet, it's a little bit, to be a little bit more discerning.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, no, that's exciting, because I think I was terrified about writing papers in college, and I didn't have to write that many, but now I love writing, so you just never know when it's going to hit you.
Yeah,
but that's true. Great. That's great. Let's see, what else do you have? You've just started this new full-time consulting. Do you have any certain clients that you're, or what? Who would be your ideal client, or who you're working with right now, if you can share part of that, and what you're working with them on?
I mean, the ideal client for me is really the executive director who's just overburdened and who sees the need for my services, or I guess sees the need for improvement and opportunities to bring in more fundraising, to communicate better. They understand inherently that needs to be done. They just don't have the resources to do it. Right. And so, you know, I love the idea of doing, like I said, that sort of 1 year side-by-side kind of work, because grant cycles are all across the year. I can't just write a whole bunch of grants for you in January, you know? Yeah. So that would be the ideal client, is just to stay with them for that year, maybe even go into the office once a month and just, you know, back and forth. And then I set up the grant application. All you have to do is edit it and hit send. And then that becomes ideally sort of an annuity, because when I'm done after that year, I've left you with a nice calendar. You know when your grants are due for the following year, when your progress reports are due, opportunities maybe for that program that we couldn't get funded this year, but it's ready to kick off next year. Mm-hmm. Here's a couple of potential funding sources for that. And then you kind of go and take it from there.
Yeah, that's good. It's almost like a retainer relationship in a way, right? But forget having you on for a year and making a commitment. Again, you talked about how important communication is. And if you're just working with someone on a short blip basis, then you don't get that relationship that really helps launch
solidify.
You.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like trying to just, you know, take things to the next level, and really just be helpful to these EDs who are so overworked.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's a big job.
They're so passionate and they're doing great work. And, you know, when you're an executive director, a lot of times you have to serve two really, really demanding masters. You have the fundraising piece of it and you have the client care piece of it, no matter whatever your mission is, serving the mission and fundraising for it. And those are two really, really demanding masters. So if I can kind of help with, obviously, the fundraising and maybe even a little bit of the mission too, in terms of, you know, defining programs, fundraising for those programs, outcomes. Everybody wants to know the outcomes and the measurements, and that can be frustrating, right? Because nothing can be intuitive anymore.
Right.
You've got to have data.
Yeah. Data dives, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, do you have any certain associations? There's the National Fundraising Professionals. There's all kinds of different associations. Are there certain ones that you've been involved with or know of that are more beneficial than others for people that want to spread their message or improve their fundraising?
And I think AFP is a good organization, Association of Fundraising Professionals, and they have various conferences. It can be a struggle because there is a cost to it, both for nonprofits and those of us who have small consulting firms. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that I'm pursuing right now, because I really am embarrassed to say that I'm only doing it just now, but I've really had the ability to focus on it, is the CFRE, which is the Certified Fundraising Executive.
Okay.
So that involves a certification process, which I'm working through right now. And it, you know, I have to basically say I have the education, whether it's a degree conferred or continuing education at conferences and workshops. I have to document all of that. I have to talk about my professional experience and then also talk about my professional successes. So actually having fundraised. And okay. So I have to document all of that. And once I'm done, I can submit it for review. If it's accepted, I can sit for the exam.
Oh, nice.
So I think that's a really, I don't think it's a deal breaker in terms of me getting or losing business, but I think it's something for professional development that's important.
Right.
It certainly would help.
Is it online or how does it, or is it a combination of things? You said CE credits, right? And then.
Right. So you can do courses online, but I've done a lot of workshops. So New Jersey Council, Center for Nonprofits, I do recommend them. By the way, I think what they do tends to be well priced and high value.
Okay.
They have a conference coming up in December, which I've been to every year. And again, it's just well priced and I always feel like I get a lot out of it. So I would highly recommend that for New Jersey nonprofits, and I'm sure there's state associations all over the place.
And Investors Bank, I went to one or two of their seminars last winter or around the holidays or whatever. They do a really good job with the speakers and nonprofit professionals and panels and things like that, and those are all free. So,
and I had heard that. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I had heard that one of their focuses was in nonprofits helping for-profits work better.
Well, I think they go hand in hand. I think it's a good idea because everybody benefits. Again, if you're establishing relationships, unless what'd you say? That's true.
Yeah, no, I think what I liked about that sentiment is that a lot of times I feel like the for-profits want to tell a not-for-profit how to operate. When, if I remember correctly, someone telling me that the investors seminars were an understanding of the fact that not-for-profits had things to teach a for-profit.
Exactly.
Certainly in terms of managing budgets, managing time, managing resources. And I just thought that sentiment was just really beautiful. And the fact that it's not a one up, one down, it's the opportunity to learn from each other because we're not all that different, the for-profit, the not-for-profit.
Yeah, you know? And I think the rise of social entrepreneurism has helped with all that
because now
nonprofits are bringing their more of an A game or more professional game and being, they've always had to be efficient with what their resources are, but they're able to, you know, maybe learn from corporate America some of the best business practices, but also the relationship helps both of them, like you said, learn from each other.
I think there's also a lot of free or low-priced resources for not-for-profits that didn't exist before. You know, you used to have to do a print newsletter and mail it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you don't have to do that anymore. In fact, I think we're kind of discouraged from doing that. I think, just in the interest of cost savings and disseminating information, social media, the e-newsletter, PDF files, really is preferred and certainly allows the opportunity. And then you have things like Canva and Vistaprint. You have all these design services at your fingertips that make things so much easier for nonprofits to professionalize their image.
Right. And we were talking about that a little bit too, because we were talking about the fact that it's so easy to start your own nonprofit these days. You can set up a website, you can get a 501c3 designation, you can do this and that, but because it's all exciting, you're like, oh, I have this great idea and I want to start this nonprofit. But as I heard one of the speakers at the Investors Bank thing say, there's 430 some odd nonprofits in New Jersey, just New Jersey. And before you set up your shingle, which, you know, it's great that you want to do something big, but maybe you should see if there's another nonprofit out there doing something similar that you could help. Or
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, at the risk of sounding overly cynical, I beg everyone who's thinking about forming a nonprofit to not just yet.
Right.
To not until you have done the research to find out what's the problem you want to solve, right? That's how we all got started, nonprofits got. What's the problem you want to solve? Is anybody else solving that problem? Okay. Are you comfortable with the way they're solving that problem? If yes, then contribute to what they're doing. If you're not quite comfortable, maybe become a program of an existing nonprofit. Propose that to that nonprofit. And if you're really not comfortable that the problem's not being solved, well, okay, then that's where you might go down the road. But before you go down that road, understand what's going to be required, because it's not just a matter of bringing in money and giving out money. You're going to have attorney fees. You're going to have auditors at some point, because you will grow, hopefully, to the point where you will need to have audited financial statements. You should be hiring staff, because if it gets very, very intensive and you're an executive director who's not paid and something happens to you, how do you replace that person for free?
Mm-hmm.
So these are things that I think people don't really think about. I think a lot of people do form foundations, mm-hmm. which makes more sense to me. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, that's a way to solve problems by merely putting money aside and then deciding who is solving those problems to your satisfaction and giving money to help solve those problems.
Right. And they have donor advised funds now,
yes.
right?
Yeah, so which you is basically your own foundation.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Good
but
point.
You have people helping you identify different mm-hmm. opportunities and places to give and things like that. So yep. there's all kinds of stuff out there that, yeah. So just do your homework, do mm-hmm. a little bit of research before you just jump out there. There's so many ways to do good. And if you're focused on doing your own, but just do some research first and then you might be able to, like you said, add a program, which would be great. So you mm-hmm. still kind of have your own little baby, but you're under an
sure.
umbrella of somebody who's doing all like the
fundraising,
yeah.
the audits, the attorneys.
Yeah, all the
yep.
paperwork that no one wants to deal yep. with,
the
right?
The infrastructure is there.
Yeah, that's good. And that's a great way to put it. Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to take another quick break and then we'll be back.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business. Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR-DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you...
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
And we're back. This is Nicole Smith. You're listening to Happy to Help. And today we're talking with the founder of Shifting Gears Consulting, Colleen Dewar. And she's a doer and has been a doer for a long time in both the profit and not-for-profit sector. And we're going to talk a little bit more about volunteering, the aspect of volunteering and managing volunteers, recruiting volunteers, and when to find where you find a good opportunity and how, where you know that volunteers are managed well and how that's done.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the nonprofit sector is so dependent upon volunteers. It's the way that everyone accomplishes their mission and the way that you get the word about what you're doing as well. And, you know, certainly volunteer management goes both ways. You know, I think the thing that I've learned after years and years of doing that is communication is absolutely key. Absolutely key. When do I get there? What do I do? What do I bring? What do I wear? What should I be prepared to do? And in some cases, it's very, you know, if you're going to work at a food pantry or a soup kitchen, that tends to be fairly prescribed. In something with something like Family Promise or maybe with Room to Read, it can be a little bit more fluid, and you have to be very clear with your volunteers that you kind of have to just adapt a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, you might get there and find six kids running around that need to be amused and kept on, you know, just a little bit of help there. You might get there and clients have decided to go to their room because they need some quiet time, but you still have to be there. So, you know, having that flexibility is really key, but if volunteers know ahead of time that they need to be flexible, that sure does help, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And then on the flip side, I think volunteers have to do what needs to be done and in the way that the nonprofit tells them to do it, because there's reasons for everything. You know, I volunteered at a soup kitchen years ago, and there was this really great force of nature that managed the kitchen, Miss Betty. And Miss Betty was very clear about what needed to be done. And so I was putting out some sort of fruit cup or something, and she wanted them stacked. And so I decided it would just be easier if I unstacked them, and she came along and stacked them back up. And here is why. Okay. So I respect that. You know,
I know Betty.
That I could do. Do you know Betty at Morristown Soup Kitchen?
Yep, yep.
Oh, do you just love her?
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, she's
right?
The force.
But you do what Betty tells you to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because there's a reason. There's a reason for it.
Yeah.
And so I think that's, we tend to, again, solve problems. It's all well-intentioned, but we think we can do better. Or
right.
Have more to offer. And sometimes, no, we just need to do what needs to be done. And the example that I give is I went to Haiti a month after the earthquake. And I had grand visions of being such a blessing to these people who were suffering and struggling. And I was we had split the team into two. One was staying at a makeshift hospital, and one was going to a refugee camp. And so I spent the first 4 days at a refugee camp digging a latrine.
Wow.
Yep. 4 days digging a latrine in Haitian soil in February. It is 95 degrees out. It is like digging into this desk. Okay.
Wow.
That was not what I had in mind.
But you had killer biceps at the
end. I had killer biceps. I sucked down a lot of Advil. But if you could have seen the conditions that these people were using the potty in and why that was needed. Okay, that's not what I had in mind. The last day I was there was the worst because I stayed back in the hospital because I simply could not get that shovel into my hands one more day.
Mm.
And again, I thought I would be a blessing. And here I was cleaning showers and bathrooms for doctors and nurses.
So it needed to be done, right?
That's what needed to be done.
Yep.
And so, you know, that was a real lesson for me because I went into it thinking that I was going to have so much to offer. Well, what was the problem there? I made it about me.
Yeah.
I made it about me.
Typical, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I really learned a lesson there about doing what needs to be done. And then we also talked about giving what needs to be given.
Mm-hmm.
And another experience was going down to Tom's River soon after Hurricane Sandy with my children. Now, mind you, this was a little bit less about a giving spirit and more about, we have no power. I am not turning the generator on again. And I have got to find an activity that doesn't cost money that's going to get us out of the house. So truth, you know, full disclosure.
That's okay.
So we went down there and we had been asked to donate a couple of things. Pet food was one. Another that I recall was Tupperware.
Mm.
Particularly microwavable Tupperware, because people were getting cans of soup and canned goods, which was great, but they were living in hotels.
Yeah.
So they had to have something that would put in a microwave.
Right.
So you don't think about these things,
the
right?
Small, yeah.
So we went down there, and what was our job? Our job was to sort clothing. I'm here to tell you, it was the most disgusting thing I have ever done.
Yikes.
There was no laundry facility. We were getting bags of clothes from smoking homes. We were getting bathing suits, half-use sunscreen. It was November. I mean, yes, it's the beach, but it's November.
Wow.
So, you know, again, I get really sensitive about this rush to donate clothing because, and I will speak solely for myself, I love to donate clothing because it makes me feel very, very good about cleaning out my closet
right.
for a good cause. So I think we have to be careful about that and really give what needs to be given. And using the Haiti example again, I had 2 weeks' notice for this trip. We were told on a conference call what needed to be brought. It was flip-flops, bandages, rubber gloves, and we had a whole list. So I went out and dutifully collected everything I could collect. the next conference call, please no more rubber gloves, no more bandages. We need over-the-counter medication. We need Sharpies. We need men's underwear.
Yikes.
Okay. Shift the bag. Third conference call.
Wow.
Right? We need maxi pads.
Yeah.
Not for the obvious purpose.
Okay.
They're incredibly absorbent.
Right.
And they had done so many surgeries at this hospital that they had so much fluid that needed to be absorbed that that's what they wanted to use
wow.
to do it. Right?
Ugh.
Drawstring bags. Because so many people were amputees and now they were up on crutches and needed something to carry their things in. So again, it's what needs to be given. And then when I got down there, there were multiple countries with, you know, Spain had a tent, England had a tent with medical staff, and all the supplies that they had brought were on this massive porch. I mean, there were more rubber gloves than the United States could use, let alone Haiti.
That ended up in the landfill, maybe, right?
Probably. But then when we got off the bus, they were screaming for saline. You know?
Yeah,
so it's just...
never know. Yeah.
It's, and things can change so quickly in a disaster. And, you know, just using that example, you can see how the volunteers on the ground just don't have the capacity to be sorting through stuff they don't need. They need to be able to get the stuff they need. And we needed shovels. Yeah. We had to go buy shovels.
Oh, wow.
You know, buckets, things like...
Yeah, communication is key, organization is key. That's crazy.
Yeah, giving what needs to be given and really pay attention to that, not just what we have. And again, I think you and I are both on the same page on this. Give cash.
Money.
Cash.
Cold hard cash. Cash is always good.
Cash, because honestly, that's what my dad did. He gave us money. We went to Haiti, my brother and I. That's what we used to buy shovels and buckets.
Yeah.
Because we had the cash to do it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I am. Well, and the other thing that you mentioned earlier is if you go into volunteering, I always say, you know, just be humble. Be an Indian, not a chief.
Yeah.
And maybe you do have some experience or some know-how that where you could see some efficiencies, but you really have to study first. You have to kind of just hang back, do what you're told, be humble, just do what needs to be done. And then maybe if you're going to work long-term with this organization, you see an opportunity or somewhere that might improve efficiency, then you can offer
said.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, when I started working at a different soup kitchen, like, I'm like, well, we do it this way and this is the way we do it. And every week does it different. And I'm like, okay, I'm taking over this week, but I'm just going to kind of hang back and see how it all works. And then I started my meatball ministry where we make meatballs.
That's a great ministry.
It's so fun. Yeah. So there's a muffin ministry for other people. Yeah. So I mean, you know, but I just let it evolve. But I'm always, you know, you got to just peruse or view the situation first. And then maybe if you've got, you know, offer and you don't want to step on egos, like, yeah, you're not going to cross Betty. Betty's like been doing this forever, right?
Yep.
So, you just kind of just be humble and be of service and just be an Indian and not a chief. And so,
yeah, because we need the Indians. We need
exactly.
the people to do, we need those boots on the ground.
And we need more Indians than chiefs. You got to remember that because everyone always wants to be like, well, let me take charge. No. You get that.
Yeah, that's true. And honestly, sometimes, you can get yourself into a little bit of trouble, particularly when you're dealing directly with clients. You have to be careful.
Yeah.
There are boundary issues.
And
you can't assume that what you're being told is 100% true. And so that's one thing that we've had some really spectacular volunteers who would call the office and say, listen, I heard this. What should I do? And there's nothing more appreciated than that. Opposed to just, well, they asked for this, so I did that. Which can really degrade the situation.
Yeah, you got to defer to the experts or the people that know, right?
Right. You cannot let your heart get in the way of common sense, and you can't be driven by guilt.
Right?
You can't make decisions based on guilt.
Well, I know because my husband started like a stampede for socks because he was helping. And then they're, oh, do you have any socks back there? So he goes and gives one guy socks and another guy a couple pairs of socks. And he's like, well, how come he got two and I got one? And oh my gosh, wait, socks? I want socks. And you're like, oh my gosh. I mean, you can't blame them. You know, they're going to like, hey, people are giving away stuff and I want some too.
Hearing a story about another feeding program, and they had the church ladies who were so wonderful at cooking and serving, but they had told them one main, one side, one dessert,
right?
One.
Got to have rules.
Okay. And they decided that they wanted to give choices. Okay. And so the director watched a fist fight happen because somebody got a lasagna and they wanted the lasagna. And she just looked at the church lady and she goes, you did that.
Yeah,
that's a little
fired.
Harsh.
You're fired.
That's a little harsh. But again, it's well-intentioned.
I know.
But there's a reason.
That's true. So, yeah. So just watch and learn, watch and learn.
Right. Yeah.
That's right.
Good advice.
Yeah. So let's go back to America's Grower Row, because that, I mean, that's gone gangbusters, right? It's doing fabulous.
Doing they're doing great work.
So but you just had decided your work had been done there, or did you get poached from somebody else? I forget what you said.
I think you summarized it well. I think my work had been done there. I really love the grassroots level stuff, you know, that sort of small nonprofit or kind of things kind of in infancy. And I like to build structure. I like process improvement. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and we haven't really talked about that, but, you know, you asked what I could offer to nonprofits. And I think that's one thing that I can, because with all due respect to grant writers, and I'm certainly one of them, what I do differently is to say, no, let's take three steps back. You know, what does your constituent database look like? Do you have one? Is it good? Because that you can build off of. Mm-hmm. And launch a lot of things off of when you have a strong constituent database. What is your grants program? Is it just a handful of grants that you've heard of? Well, let's take three steps back. Let's do some research. Let's find some funding sources. Let's write a letter of inquiry. Let's develop a process.
Right.
And the same thing with a communications plan. I'm no marketing expert, but by the same token, I think I can develop a simple communications plan to say, we're going to do this many Facebook posts a week. This month, we're going to focus on this. Next month, focus on that. And just kind of spur some content ideas and some white paper ideas and some advocacy pieces that you can just start developing and writing and then pull from.
Right.
Right. So instead of going, we need a better Facebook profile, well, let's take three steps back. Right.
Nice.
So, so that's what I was able to do at Grow a Row and also at Family Promise. And that's the part that I really, really enjoy.
Right. And you bring a fresh pair of eyes to any organization, right? So that's always helpful too. You know, let me look at this objectively, and you've obviously got the experience and the expertise to bring to modifying that and how to make it more effective.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So what's going well and what can we just sort of tweak a little bit?
Right. And once again, the website is shiftinggears.consulting.
You got it.
Correct. Okay. And it's Colleen Dewar, and you can find her on the web, like she just mentioned, and we are involved in Hunterdon. We've got a plug for the Women's Business Summit. It's April 9th.
April 9th. Yeah, this is coming together beautifully. We've got a lot about communications, about building your brand, about work, you know, building your company's brand, and just some really exciting opportunities, I think, for everybody. I think, wouldn't you agree? I think we've got content for everybody, from the small business to the large corporation. And it is going to be a really great educational and inspirational day.
Yeah, it's a great day. I've been the last 3 or 4 years, and it's really fun. And I'm glad to be working with you this year to help build that, because it's a great event. It's about 100 people usually. We'd love to expand that, but it's a nice, it's a good networking event too. You can really meet great people. So,
and it's not limited to chicks.
Oh, that's right.
Men are welcome.
Men are welcome. Yeah, Chris needs someone to hang out with. All right, well, that's April 9th. And then again, don't forget the Hunterdon Expo is November 9th coming up.
The 30th. Friday.
Yep. All right, well, we'll see you in Hunterdon. And thank you so much, Colleen.
Thanks, Nicole.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes. Muslims angrily protesting in the streets of Pakistan today after Pakistan's Supreme Court overturns a Christian woman's conviction for blasphemy against Islam. The mother of four had been on death row for 8 years and became the first woman sentenced to death by hanging under Pakistan's harsh blasphemy laws. But again, her conviction was overturned on Wednesday by Pakistan's highest court. President Trump insisted that birthright citizenship will be ended one way or another, tweeting this morning that, quote, many legal scholars agree that birthright citizenship is not covered by the 14th Amendment to the Constitution.
We've been here before. Let's act like it.
The Boston Police Commissioner is speaking there. Revelers who are starting a Celtics Sox World Series victory with a parade at this hour. And this is USA Radio News.
And he knows finding the right hire takes time away from your business.
Hiring a qualified data engineer felt like a second job.
More job seekers use Indeed than any other site, so there's no better place to find someone with the skills you're looking for.
I need someone with a master's in computer science and database experience.
Plus, Indeed screener questions help you find your shortlist fast.
Now I'm back to having just one job.
See why more than 3 million companies worldwide use Indeed to hire. Post your job at Indeed.com/hire. Indeed. was no one in our sight, so it comes over to all this.
Well, you heard me talking for a year about how much I love my pillow. You can get one too. And now it's a better deal than ever. You go to mypillow.com, click on buy one, get one free special, use promo code USA, you'll get one free pillow when you buy one at regular price plus shipping. And don't forget, now you have until March 1st to return it if you're not absolutely in love with it. Go to mypillow.com, use promo code USA, or call 1-800-951-8175. But do it now.
ADP and analytics reporting this morning the economy added 227,000 private sector jobs this month, 9,000 more than last month. The government jobs report for October is due out tomorrow, saying several women may have been offered money to make false claims about them. Special Counsel Robert Mueller's office says that matter has now been turned over to the FBI. Former U.S. Attorney Barbara McQuaid says these are serious crimes if they're true.
If the goal here was to get Robert Mueller fired, then certainly that could be an accusation of obstruction of justice, and anyone who participated in that could be guilty of conspiracy to obstruct justice.
She was speaking on MSNBC, a 24-year-old Indiana woman facing...
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go and pay.